suburban town.
And Health Talk is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with Tahiti Nui, Heaven on Earth Starts, and Bikram Yoga.
Announcing the return of the Tahiti Nui's Hanalei Lu'au, featuring 50 years of songs and dances as a tribute to their mama, Auntie Louise. Tahiti Nui, providing live Hawaiian music on Kauai since 1963. This family-style luau is every Wednesday, 5 to 7:30. More information at 826-6277 or online at thenui.com.
Heaven on Earth starts here. Organically grown, GMO-free vegetable starts available at Hoku Foods in Kapa'a, Kauai Seascapes Nursery in Kalihiwai Ridge, and Saturday Morning Market next to Kauai Mini Golf. More information at heavenonearthstarts@gmail.com.
Bikram Yoga Kauai, located in Kapa'a, provides authentic Bikram Yoga. A 90-minute beginner's series is practiced in a heated studio with newly remodeled hot showers and changing rooms. All levels welcome. Improves physical health and overall well-being. Boutique open and classes available 7 days a week. KauaiBikramYoga.com or 823-9642.
Okay, and mahalo for supporting Kauai Community Radio. And I must say the views and opinions are those of the speakers and do not represent those of KKCR, its board, its underwriters, its members, or its programmers. And we have a guest today, Dr. Donna Kaplan. Hi. We have... Whoops. Here we go. Okay. Now we're all set.
Aloha, Cousin
Hey,
Rich.
How are you doing today?
And our guest, Dr. Stephanie Seneff.
Hi,
again.
Welcome back.
Aloha, delighted to be back.
Yeah, from Thank your you. Winter in Boston to our winter in Kauai.
Yes, really a shame. really a shame to miss the Boston winter, but you know, you got to do what you got to do.
Well, welcome.
Thank you.
Okay. So, and what's our topic today, Donna?
We are going to be talking about the Zika virus and microcephaly and the issues around, you know, what might be causing that. Is it the Zika virus? And we'll also get into how toxicities are likely causing other issues with common neurological diseases. So, Stephanie, Dr. Seneff, thank you so much for coming again. You were here a month ago.
Yes, it seems to be a good hangout for me. I really enjoy being here. It's a great station.
And you're putting all the pieces together and so many more since a month ago.
Absolutely. I've been really digging deep.
We'll be adding on to what we were talking about in our last show together.
Right.
So let's talk about the Zika virus that's been up in the news.
Right. It's really interesting how the media have really grabbed hold of this idea and tried to get everybody to believe, to get on board with the idea that Zika is the cause of the microcephaly epidemic in Brazil and that that's the end of the story.
So those who haven't been listening to the media, what is microcephaly?
So microcephaly is a disorder in development where the child is born with a head that's too small. And often that means that the cerebral cortex is too small. And, of course, that's going to probably lead to various kinds of mental deficiencies. They don't know how these kids are going to turn out. Some of them will probably be severely deficient mentally. Mm-hmm. And they have had a huge, huge over-representation of microcephaly in Brazil, particularly over the past year. So clearly something's going on there.
Right. And they jumped to the conclusion that the Zika virus is a possible cause.
Right. And, of course, one of the reasons was because the Zika virus infection is very rare and it was sufficiently commonly found that the mothers who were having these microcephaly babies born seemed to have had the Zika virus more often than other mothers. But it is by no means all of the cases. And, in fact, one study that I read about was 49 infants who died. They had severe microcephaly. They died. And they analyzed them for the antibody, and they found the antibody in about 10%. And I think 5 of the 49, they found the antibody. So the other 44 did not have the antibody. Mm-hmm. So you have to say, well, okay, 5 out of, you know, that's 10%. So what about the other 90%? What caused their microcephaly? So they're not making it clear that there might be something else going on here because Zika is not enough to explain it. And right. Also, there's never been any evidence that Zika causes microcephaly. Zika's been around since the mid-1900s, And it was in Africa first, and it's been moving around the earth. And so now it's into South America, and it's, you know, moving out of Brazil into other areas. Colombia actually had, I think they analyzed several thousand mothers who caught Zika during pregnancy, and not a single one of them had a baby with microcephaly.
Now, that's very interesting.
Quite remarkable. So there's something different between Brazil and Colombia, mm-hmm. something else that is somehow making the kids different in those two places.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, that seems very major, because they're the CDC and the World Health Organization, they're putting out warnings for pregnant women not to travel in these areas and to contact their doctors. And
right, and
so
of course they're also
a lot of
investing,
fear.
Yeah, investing money in developing a vaccine, which is what really worries me, because they're going to convince us all that, certainly not me, but some other people, that, oh my God, the Zika virus, I have to get the vaccine. And people will be so happy that this vaccine, once it's developed, here it is, let me get it. And the vaccine will probably have issues itself, and mm-hmm. it won't actually solve the microcephaly problem. Mm-hmm. So,
and currently there are some cases of Zika virus in the United States, I believe in
yes.
Florida and
mm-hmm.
Even in Hawaii, possibly.
I don't know of Zika in Hawaii. I know we've had some
that.
Problems with dengue fever. But
right.
Yes.
Right. But otherwise, it's a mild virus.
Yes, quite a mild disease. I don't think there's any evidence of people dying from it, you know, from the mm-hmm. previous cases. It's carried by the mosquito, and so that's part of the issue also, is what they're doing in Brazil. And we can get into this maybe first, because this is a simple piece of the story. Because of the Zika, and of course because of dengue fever, which is going up also in Brazil, they're having trouble with excessive amounts of dengue fever, which is carried by the mosquito. And so they have been increasingly using insecticides to kill the mosquito. And there's a particular one, this pyrrhopropoxifen, I've got it written down here, which is a larvicide. It actually kills
the larvae.
Larvae of the mm-hmm. mosquito. And I've seen on the web stories that they have been putting this larvicide into the drinking water
right.
in Brazil
right.
In order to prevent the larvae from growing in the drinking water supply. And so, I mean, that just seems really scary to me. And so there are actually doctors in Brazil who are proposing on the web. They have fairly good stories that are saying maybe it's this larvicide, which
and
is also being used extensively in that area where
in
they
the
have
area,
an epidemic.
Right.
Yes.
And that's in the... Is it the northeast of
northeast
Brazil?
Northeast of Brazil, yes. And mm-hmm. And I want to say that that's an area that has a lot of GMO soybeans being grown as crops for export. And I'm going to get into why I think that's another piece of the puzzle.
Mm-hmm. So they're actually adding the larvicide, what is it?
Pyrrhopropoxifen. These things always have long, complicated
right.
names.
But they're adding that to the water
I know.
Supply.
I cannot believe. Brazil seems to be, and, you know, I have to say the U.S. is not very good either in this issue. Both Brazil and the U.S. seem to be very happy to release toxic chemicals and to use them in various ways mm-hmm. to control various outbreaks of bugs or to control weeds. You know, they don't seem to realize, Brazil doesn't realize and the U.S. doesn't realize the potential danger of all these chemicals, particularly when they're working together. A lot of synergistic toxicity. So when you start to mix in everything that's going on in Brazil, this area has a lot of mm-hmm. risk of exposure to all kinds of different chemicals. And these people are poor there. It's a poor part of Brazil.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't have as good sanitation. I mean, they've got a lot of issues there.
And it was actually the doctors in this area of Brazil that are saying, okay,
yes.
what about this larvicide?
That's
you know,
right.
There's this, we're seeing so many more evidence of microcephaly since this larvicide has been added.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. And then we have those GM mosquitoes that are in the area.
I know.
As well,
that's
right?
another
GMO
one.
Mosquitoes.
That is so fascinating. I kind of jumped down a rabbit hole with that one because I had to dig in to figure out what is going on with this. And this is an example of, you know, GMO technology just being released into the environment willy-nilly without, you know, seriously thinking about possible consequences. And so it turns out this is a mosquito that was grown in a confined environment in the Cayman Islands. And then it's a fancy thing with a GMO modification that will cause the males to be sterile unless they are supplied with tetracycline, an antibiotic. It's very bizarre. So you give them the antibiotic to grow them up and to produce them and so that you can release them into the wild. And then in the wild, the theory is that they will fertilize or try to fertilize the females, compete with the native male mosquitoes, and then fertilize the female with sperm that can't reproduce so that it'll end that in that generation. That's the concept. You know, it doesn't sound too bad. But there's just lots of stuff going on with that, that who knows what's going on. And they released this mosquito in Brazil. Brazil volunteered, you know, yeah, we'll try this. And that's an example of Brazil being very casual about the GMOs. This is now GMO animal rather than GMO plant, and just put this mosquito in there. And it hasn't been effective, but but this is the area where they released it. Released it in a town called Juazeiro, J-U-A-Z-E-I-R-O, which is right in the middle of the area where they have microcephaly epidemic. So maybe that's playing a role. I mean, who knows, right? It's just mm-hmm. another possibility.
Mm-hmm. And I know several years back, there was at least a town in Florida where they put mm-hmm. out GMO mosquitoes as well.
Right.
But I know that there's some Zika cases in Florida.
That's interesting, isn't it?
It is.
Very, very interesting. And I can imagine that, for example, because this GMO mosquito was to fight dengue fever, and it's possible somehow that this mosquito, because of its GMO, is more susceptible to Zika infection. It mm-hmm. could be that simple, and therefore it's more likely to give the Zika virus to them. And I also think it might be more likely to, we haven't gotten into glyphosate yet, but glyphosate is something I talk about a lot in the past. And that GMO mosquito was fed sucrose followed by blood. The larvae were fed sucrose in this environment, and then blood for the mosquitoes once they grew up in this confined environment. And that sucrose could have had a glyphosate in it that could have gotten into the mosquito. So the GMO mosquitoes might be carrying a lot more glyphosate than other mosquitoes.
I guess the blood could have, too, for
the
that
blood,
matter.
Both the blood and the sucrose could be containing. Because mm-hmm. you don't know, I couldn't figure out where the blood was coming from, but if it's coming from cows that have fed GMO Roundup Ready feed, it's going to have glyphosate. And the sucrose is coming from either the beets or the sugarcane, both of which are likely to have glyphosate. So it could be those mosquitoes are getting a concentrated dose of glyphosate in their feed mm-hmm. and therefore releasing glyphosate into the mix when they inject whatever they inject. You know, when they bite somebody, they are injecting glyphosate.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So here we have, you know, we've got the larvicide, we've got the GMO mosquitoes, and the Zika virus, and they're saying, oh, it's the Zika virus
right.
that's causing this microcephaly. Now, the microcephaly was there even before the Zika virus.
It was. And, in fact, there's a great article I found by about Dr. Sandra Matos, M-A-T-T-O-S, who is a Brazilian researcher. And she had been doing a study on kids with heart defects. They were looking into congenital heart disorder. Mm-hmm. And so they had a lot of data going back several years. And for these kids that they were studying, they had measured the head circumference. And so she said, oh, I've got data. I can take a look to see exactly when did this start to go up, this incidence of microcephaly. Because they were saying it's only in the past year. So when she looked, she said, oh, my God, they had high rates of microcephaly in 2012. In this area. So mm-hmm. it's been since 2012 that they've had the problem. And the Zika virus was only first identified, I think, in May of this year.
Mm-hmm.
So all of that time before the Zika virus, they had the microcephaly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, that's very interesting. And the fact that, as you said, in Colombia,
yes.
they've had thousands of cases of women and pregnant women having the Zika virus and not having
right.
any known effect on the infants.
Right, so you've got microcephaly without the virus, and you've got the virus without microcephaly.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And what else?
Yes, well, I'll give you one more thing first, and then we'll get into the big topic, vaccines.
Mm-hmm.
Because Brazil has, and U.S. has been aggressive too. Brazil and U.S. and maybe probably other countries around the world are getting more and more careless about giving vaccines to pregnant women. Somehow all of a sudden this is fine, you know, because it used to be they've never been tested on pregnant women. It used
right.
to be that, no, you don't want to give vaccines to pregnant women.
Absolutely.
Because,
it all of
yeah.
a sudden changed.
Well, all the toxic chemicals that are in the vaccines. And so in Brazil, apparently in December of last year, they had a ruling, a regulation. They wanted to encourage pregnant women to get vaccinated with something called the Tdap vaccine. This is the adult form of the DTP, DTaP vaccine, for the whooping cough, because they were seeing, you know, additional cases of whooping cough, and people's vaccinations were wearing off, and they thought, we've got to, you know, you probably know about this.
Well, yeah, we're having that in this country, too. They're
yes.
recommending that pregnant women get this.
It's just amazing.
And it's not just for the whooping cough. It's tetanus, diphtheria, and pertussis.
Yes, but I guess my understanding was it was the pertussis that was causing them to think that they should give this booster shot to these pregnant women. And Tdap contains aluminum. I have written papers about aluminum and its toxicity to the brain. And I believe aluminum is connected to autism and other neurological diseases. And so to me, the concept of injecting aluminum into a pregnant woman is just horrific. And it just amazes me that this is fine. You know, this is fine.
And they're also recommending flu shots for all pregnant women.
Right. That also upsets me greatly. And the flu shot often contains mercury. And it also contains glutamate, which is a neurotoxin. And there's also MMR. So people were, in my chatter groups, people were saying, oh, yeah, yeah, they're giving MMR as well to the pregnant women in Brazil. So flu shot, MMR.
What are MRs.
Measles, mumps, and rubella, that one has been linked to autism, you know, in the research. And it contains glutamate.
A lot of people are getting shingles shots.
Yes, I know. That's
all
another
these
one.
For pneumococcal pneumonia, it's all over the TV.
It's just crazy. I mean, our concept is just keep on giving people all these vaccines to try to chase away all these diseases that are out of control. And we don't seem to be able to step back and say, wait a minute, this isn't working. You know, at the basic level, this is not working. We have to do something different. So this is the price we pay.
Yeah, and at least let's study.
Right, right.
And all these vaccinations all at once.
Right.
For the children.
It's just really, really scary to me. It's very disturbing.
It is. So
now the star of the story. I want to introduce glufosinate. And so glufosinate is probably something most of the audience doesn't know what it is. And
well, you know, if we're going, I do want to talk a little bit more about the vaccinations,
if we
could, because we have seven bills that have been introduced to the legislature here in Hawaii right now.
Yes, I'm aware of that. I'm very worried.
And they have to do with taking away the ability to have religious and conscientious exemption. They have to do with requiring that all 12-year-old children going into seventh grade get the Gardasil vaccination. There's one that has to do with if there's a national recommended vaccination that Hawaii can implement forced vaccination of this particular vaccination within 90 days. I think there are a few other ones too. I believe that there are seven different ones.
Right, I heard that too, and I heard the Gardasil one got canceled or something or tabled.
Oh, really?
I don't know. Someone better check that. Better fact check that.
Yeah, well, we're actually going to have, for the next Health Talk radio show on March 7th, we're going to have Barbara Lowe Fisher, who is the founder of the National Vaccine Information Center. And she's very, very knowledgeable. So
that's great. That's
so
really great.
We'll
I
be
love
talking
her.
About
wonderful.
The vaccinations and what these bills, what these potential laws will, how that will impact us in Hawaii.
Great,
so.
Great.
All right, so on to
glufosinate.
Glufosinate,
yes.
And this is different than glyphosate.
It's different from glyphosate.
What you've been studying
exactly.
for the last couple of years.
Exactly so. And in fact, it's related to glyphosate in terms of its toxicity. I believe that it's a similar underlying generic mechanism of toxicity of both of those chemicals and also of many other chemicals that I'm studying now to see this sort of general pattern. And the general pattern is very exciting to me because I think it can potentially explain the core underlying cause of all neurological diseases. So I'm being very grand here in the scope of the potential of this idea. And so first of all, glufosinate is an herbicide. And glyphosate, of course, is an herbicide, and glyphosate has been very successfully used on all the GMO Roundup-ready crops. Those crops are engineered to be resistant, otherwise the plant dies. So
glyphosate
kills everything.
Glyphosate is the main ingredient in Roundup.
That's right. It's the main ingredient in Roundup. It kills all plants except for those that have this special bacterial gene inserted through the GMO that gives them protection, and those are the core crops of the processed food industry. And Brazil grows lots of those crops, and they, in fact, cottons, corn, and soy are really big crops in Brazil. And in that northeast corner of Brazil, it's mostly soy, as far as I understand. Lots of soy. And it's going to be GMO Roundup Ready soy. So they're going to be exposed to glyphosate. And that's already a problem because glyphosate has been shown to cause microcephaly in tadpoles.
Mm-hmm.
So glyphosate by itself can cause microcephaly, but I don't think it's the real source of the epidemic, because the glyphosate is being used for a long time
all over the world
and in Brazil, and it didn't, you know, I don't think they greatly increased the amount of glyphosate they were using in the last few years. I suspect mm-hmm. that it's an introduction of something else, and I suspect that something else is glufosinate, because glufosinate was introduced. They in Brazil approved glufosinate resistant soy in 2010.
Mm-hmm.
So they proved it, and so then I'm guessing, I don't have proof, that they started growing soy that was resistant to glufosinate, and they started using glufosinate on those crops.
Now we're just talking about Brazil, right?
Yes.
This isn't happening in the United States.
It is happening in the United States. Well, we also use glufosinate, and we also have approved of glufosinate-resistant crops. So mm-hmm. I don't know how much. I think we use a lot less than we do glyphosate, mostly because glyphosate is considered to be a lot safer mm-hmm. to humans.
Mm-hmm.
And I think glyphosate-resistant weeds are a problem everywhere, you know, and so especially with among the GMO crops. And so they're facing a situation where the crop, where they can't kill the weeds with the glyphosate, so they have to switch to the glufosinate.
Like initially they could.
Yes, and now they can't.
And now they can't anymore because...
And so the companies come up with a solution. Okay, great, just use this new herbicide. We've got this new resistance gene. Just switch your soy to the one that is resistant to glufosinate and use that instead.
Mm-hmm.
And then you'll be good to go. So now, I imagine, some of the crops are probably glyphosate resistant. Some of them are glufosinate resistant. The people are living among both. So they're getting exposure from the crops to both the glufosinate and the glyphosate, which are probably synergistically toxic towards causing this microcephaly, along with, of course, everything else, the vaccines and the GMO mosquito and all the stuff.
Right, and they have, in this area, they're growing a lot of this soy.
Right, exactly.
This GMO soy, right?
Right, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think enormous percentage of the soy in Brazil is GMO.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, nearly 100%.
So people can be getting exposed to it through eating the soy,
right.
The air.
That's right.
And
the water.
The water.
Mm-hmm. All three sources, yes. I think the
right.
people who are living right there among the crops are extremely vulnerable to exposure.
Uh-huh. And this is where they've had a high incidence of the microcephaly, is that right?
That's right, exactly where they mm-hmm. have the high incidence. It really fits very well.
Mm-hmm.
And so now I want to get into the mechanism of toxicity, if that's okay, unless you want to say something else first.
That's great. Well, I will say that Brazil is second in production of GMO crops to the United States.
Yes, that's
in the world.
Right. And I think Brazil may be outpacing the United States in terms of the amount of chemicals they're buying. I think they are really, I mean, the United States and Brazil are probably the top leaders of buying all these toxic chemicals and using them to grow crops,
mm-hmm.
which is sad, but... Yeah, so the glufosinate, so how does it cause microcephaly? How would it cause microcephaly? I have come up with what I think is an excellent explanation for how that would happen. Now, first of all, glyphosate and glufosinate are both amino acids. And they are non-coding amino acids. So amino acids are the building blocks of proteins, and there are 20 of them. And the genetic code, people probably know about the genetic code, the DNA code, the triple code. That codes for the amino acids. And so it's really fascinating how biology works, that you have these sequences of DNA units that encode a production line to make a beads on a string of amino acids. So you've got 20, sort of like 20 Tinker Toys that you're putting together in a row to make a really interesting molecule that can do interesting things. It's a beautiful design. So when they put the right amino acids in sequence, they make this protein into something really special that can do something really unusual in terms of, you know, reactions, producing products from other things and doing all the things that living things have to do to live. Really fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
And so glufosinate and glyphosate are both amino acids, which is interesting. Glyphosate is a synthetic amino acid. Glufosinate is actually a natural amino acid produced by some microbes.
Hmm.
It's natural, but it's not a coding amino acid, meaning that it's not supposed to go into the proteins. It's not supposed to. But the problem, I suspect, is that it does by mistake. And it's well established that glufosinate looks like glutamate. So it's not mm-hmm. glutamate, but it looks similar.
And glutamate is
one of the 20 basic amino acids that have codes. And so every time a protein wants to put glutamate on the bead, as a bead on the string, mm-hmm. it's looking for a glutamate. Oh, here's one. Good, I'll put that in. But it turns out it's not. It's glufosinate. It looks like glutamate, and the machinery makes a mistake. It's
mm-hmm.
just an error in coding. And that is all it would take to totally explain the link between glufosinate and microcephaly. Because there is an enzyme that's called asparagine synthetase, which produces an amino acid, asparagine, one of the coding amino acids, one of the 20, asparagine, is produced by this enzyme. And the enzyme has glutamate critically. So, you know, lots of proteins have glutamate, but some of them have glutamate that is critically important to them. Mm-hmm. And this is one of those that absolutely has to have glutamate at that spot or else it won't work. So once you replace the glutamate with glufosinate, the enzyme doesn't work, asparagine does not get synthesized, and asparagine is essential because it is the place where they hook on these sugar chains that make the protein work. So asparagine is a crucial molecule in the protein that's being built, mm-hmm. and the asparagine is going to be broken because of the glufosinate instead of glutamate. I mean, asparagine won't be produced, so you'll have a deficiency in asparagine. And they have shown, I mean, there's a beautiful paper I found that showed a deficiency in asparagine leading to microcephaly because of a defective asparagine synthetase gene. So it's specifically what would happen if glufosinate was there, but it happened because of a genetic mutation. So it's a genetic version of the same problem. And these people developed microcephaly along with immune deficiency, which is very interesting because immune deficiency will allow you to be more susceptible to the Zika virus. So I think the cause and effect might be the other way around, that the Zika is not causing the microcephaly, but the same thing that's causing the microcephaly is causing the Zika infection because it's reducing the immune strength of that person's, of the mother's ability to resist the mm-hmm. virus infection.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Wow. So we were talking about this in our last show together a month ago. We were talking about this protein chain with the different amino acids,
yes.
and how if the body uses a different amino acid in there, it's
right.
going to cause huge differences.
It's really interesting.
Huge outcomes.
Yeah, and it's only, you know, and you have to really dig through the research literature to find out which ones, because many proteins have glutamate in them. Mm-hmm. Or have asparagine in them, and any of these 20 are in various different, I mean, all the proteins sort of, you know, have a bunch of different ones in there, but there's just certain ones that are super, super critical for their function. It might be at the active site, or it might be what allows them to hook to the membrane. Whatever they're doing, they can't do it if that one is not the one that needs to be there. So whenever you change that particular one, you cause devastation to that particular protein.
Mm-hmm.
And other proteins, maybe they just get along fine. You know, glufosinate, I don't care, that's fine. It's not really important. I can get by with it. But when you have a critical, when it's in the critical path, you're in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
And that's this thing with this asparagine synthetase.
Well, that's an amazing link.
It is 12:30, and you are listening to Health Talk, the first and third Mondays of the month, with Dr. Donna Kaplan, and our guest this week is Dr. Stephanie Seneff, and it's always good to have you. And how can people read your works and
give
that information?
Yeah, I think the easiest thing to do is to type in S-E-N-E-F-F, if you can remember that, my last name, S-E-N-E-F-F, into a Google search engine, and you'll find a lot of stuff, various radio interviews. Actually, I've done a lot of radio interviews. I have a webpage at MIT. I'm at MIT, and I have a webpage there, which is a little complicated, but I'll give that to you now, P-E-O-P-L-E, people, dot, C-S-A-I-L, C-S-A-I-L. That's my laboratory, Computer Science and Artificial Intelligence Laboratory, people.csail.mit.edu/, and then my last name, S-E-N-E-F-F. So that's kind of a mouthful, but if you type my last name, that's probably going to be at the top of the hit list, so if you can find it. You can find my website, and there I have a lot of stuff posted, mostly papers I've written, slideshows. I have various slides of various talks that I've given. So there's a lot of material. I also have some other people's material there that I found interesting. So you can browse around my webpage and find lots of stuff.
And how about you, Dr. Donna Kaplan?
I'm at, well, I'll give you my phone number, and that's 828-6153, and that's in Hawaii, so it's area code 808-828-6153, and I'm at AlohaFamilyHealthKauai.com.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.
So back to our story, piecing the puzzle together. So did you start looking at this glufosinate through researching about the Zika virus? Is that it?
Yes. Well, it was really interesting that I suspected glufosinate just because I knew there was a problem with the resistance of the glyphosate, you know, all this Roundup Ready crops that were where the weeds were becoming so out of control and they needed another solution. And then I sort of discovered, oh, they had this glufosinate resistance, which I hadn't known, you know. And then I thought, oh, my God, they're probably going to use this. And I already knew that glufosinate was a substitute for glutamate and that it could insert itself. I have just finished putting together a paper with Anthony Samsel where we are proposing that glyphosate can substitute for glycine just the same way as we're proposing that glufosinate can substitute for glutamate in protein synthesis. And if you do make that assumption about glyphosate...
That it's going to get into where glycine should be in the molecule.
Exactly mm-hmm. the same thing that's happening with the glufosinate. I think it's mm-hmm. happening with the glyphosate, and it's actually incredible because glycine turns out to be an extremely important amino acid. It's the tiniest amino acid. And the proteins tend to put it in places where they need a lot of flexibility. And so those are really important to make sure that you have that flexibility. Therefore, you have to have glycine there. But if you put glyphosate there instead, you won't have that flexibility. You'll lose it, and then the protein won't work properly. And we've been finding all these cases where there's genetic mutations where the glycine is turned into something else, and then the person has some kind of disease. And then it turns out all those diseases that we're finding are exactly the things that we've seen from Nancy Swanson's studies on correlations to see that those things are going up in step with the increased use of glyphosate on crops. So it comes all the way back around again to the epidemiological studies to say, wow, this can explain that. So why are we having lots of diabetes, lots of autism, lots of Alzheimer's, lots of liver disease? All these things we can explain by conserved glycines that are getting wrecked by glyphosate. So we think it's happening, and we think it explains this insidious toxicity of glyphosate. And what happens is it happens very slowly over time because you just get more and more of your molecules. It gets out into your system and slowly builds up over time. As you get very low doses of glyphosate in every meal, and then small amounts of it add in to the mix, and eventually you get, your brain gets overwhelmed with this glyphosate. And in fact, amyloid beta, which is the key signature misfolded protein in mm-hmm. Alzheimer's disease, has conserved glycines that have been targeted as the source of the trouble. Mm-hmm. So it's quite remarkable. And in fact, it was really an amazing paper I found this, that if you replace that glycine with alanine, which is a very small modification of the glycine, you put alanine instead of glycine.
And alanine is one of the
amino acids. And one of the coding. Yeah, it's one of the coding amino acids. But you can mm-hmm. put that instead of glycine in these experiments, and you can show that that produces an especially toxic form of amyloid beta. So you figure you put glyphosate in there, it's going to do the same thing.
Right. And people don't realize that, you know, if they're not having an organic diet, they're getting low doses of
right.
Roundup of glyphosate because it's used so extensively, right?
Oh, yes, absolutely. It's in the food. There's no question.
Not only are they using it on GMO crops,
right,
like corn and soy, cottonseed oil.
Canola.
Yeah, sugar beets.
Sugar beets, that's a big
right.
one. Yes.
So not only that, and also the animal feeds, so
yes.
the animal products, but all the vegetables that aren't GMO are going to have...
They're spraying it on the non-GMO crops right before the harvest, and that includes sugar cane and wheat. I mean, some really basic core mm-hmm. crops that are being sprayed with glyphosate right before the harvest, and I suspect there's high concentrations in bread. I mean, this mm-hmm. is probably
and
why we have...
And you can't just wash it off.
No,
no. The vegetable washer.
You can't. You can't.
It's right in there.
It's right inside
the hole.
Yes, you can't wash it off. It's mm-hmm. very scary to me. So you're just getting a slow dose. You're getting a very slow... buildup of a toxin that will eventually give you something like Alzheimer's disease.
And does the body have a way to get rid of the toxin?
I wish I knew. I think if you can maintain a healthy vasculature, you'll be better off. You don't want to have a leaky brain barrier, for example, because that's going to encourage it to get into the brain. So as long as you can maintain a healthy vasculature, and to me that means making sure you're getting plenty of sulfur in your diet and you're getting plenty of sun exposure to your skin, and, of course, eating organic would be the thing to do. Whether you can get it out, I don't know. Once the glyphosate is in the proteins, it seems to me like it would be extremely hard to get it out. Often you get these proteins that you cannot break down. Mm-hmm. So that's why you get amyloid beta. Many of these neurological diseases, it's amazing how many of them are associated with these misfolded proteins that the body can't break down. So these things just accumulate and pile up. And so in Alzheimer's, you have these, you see these piles of this amyloid beta just kind of, you know, it's obvious that that's part of the problem, and mm-hmm. and the cells can't break it down, so there's kind of no way to get rid of it. Right. I think actually, potentially, one way to get rid of it is to bring in some smart microbes, so that might be why Alzheimer's, for example, is associated with various infections of the brain with various microbes, and I'm guessing, and I haven't proven this, that those microbes have some skills that maybe they are able to metabolize those busted proteins and therefore you know, break them up and get them out, or turn them into something non-toxic. So I find that a very interesting concept, that the microbes may be coming in to repair things that the human body is unable to repair.
And how does that relate to the glyphosate causing the bacteria, the beneficial bacteria in the gut to die?
Yeah, well, I suspect that this is part of the problem with them as well, is that the glyphosate's getting into their proteins and causing them to die. There's many other ways that glyphosate is toxic as well that I've talked about in the past. It chelates the minerals. You know, it doesn't, the lactobacillus critically depend on manganese, and glyphosate makes it unavailable, and that's going to cause them to die and to not be able to flourish. And then once they're not flourishing, you get an overgrowth of pathogens in the gut that sort of take over the gut and cause the inflammatory bowel disease. That causes the leaky gut, which allows these undigested proteins to get loose into the blood and cause all these autoimmune diseases like gluten and, you know, gluten intolerance and all these. The kids have so many allergies to peanuts and to wheat and to, you know, all these different foods. And I think it's actually very interesting with both casein intolerance, casein is milk, and gluten intolerance. And I am suspecting that both the milk and the gluten have glyphosate in the protein. So once you say glyphosate can go into proteins, it means it can go into casein and it can go into gluten. Mm-hmm. And so if there's glyphosate in place of glycine in those proteins, and therefore, and that's going to cause them to not be able to be broken down. And when you eat those proteins, your body can't break them down because of the glyphosate in there. And that's how they become then toxic, and they your immune system picks up on that and develops an immune toxicity to those molecules. It makes a lot of sense to me.
Mm-hmm. Now, in our last show together a month ago, we talked about the amyloid plaque, the soluble versus the insoluble. Do you mind talking about that?
Right. Well, so I think what's happened, the glyphosate is more soluble than glycine, and so glycine is insoluble, and it sort of helps to make this protein fold correctly into this kind of like a ball, you might say, where those non-water soluble molecules are all kind of folded up into a tight ball that is supposed to be the way it's supposed to work. But if you put the glyphosate there instead of the glycine, then it can't. And then at once it's folded into that ball, then the system can go ahead and digest it, can break it down. And so this is a protein that is wasted. You know, it may have been damaged by oxygen or by sugar, so it needs to be cleared. But then, and so the body's constantly actually breaking these proteins down and then reassembling them into new proteins. But when you have glyphosate instead of glycine, then the protein becomes soluble and it becomes inaccessible to the breakdown machinery. And so therefore it just sits around and it accumulates in the cell, causing trouble.
And you wouldn't necessarily see that.
Because it's dissolved.
Right.
Yes, that's right. It's not part of the package you're seeing.
And I think there were studies saying that the dissolved are more toxic.
Yes, it's more toxic than the one that's
plaque in the brain.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Yes, that was very interesting to find out. That was part of what I had read about in my studies.
So the glufosinate is a different chemical.
Yes.
It's working in a similar way.
Exactly, the same process. And now we have other ones as well.
Causing the microcephaly. Right?
Yes, yes. And so, of course, given that I saw glyphosate and glufosinate both with this potential mechanism of substituting into the proteins, I of course would ask the question: are there other examples of this?
And so
when I started to ask this question, I didn't know of any. It's not something you necessarily know about, you know, because it's pretty obscure. But then I found two really, really fascinating stories, and one of them is about an epidemic of ALS, Legarix disease, in the island of Guam. And the other one is about multiple sclerosis and finding a correlation between high incidence of multiple sclerosis and sugar beets. So very interesting stories.
Yeah, let's talk about them. Which one do you want to start with?
Yeah, I guess we'll start with Guam.
Okay.
Very interesting. Guam is an island in the South Pacific. It played a major role in World War II.
It's a U.S. territory.
Yeah, U.S. territory. We had it as a base in World War II. There was a lot of stuff going on with the war there, so there were a lot of chemicals that they were being exposed to during the war, just from the bombings and whatnot. You can imagine. I don't even know what all there was, but I'm sure there was a lot of stuff. And they have their cycad is a fruit there that is very popular, and the natives like to eat the cycad. And they were aware the cycad had a toxicity element to it, and they knew how to sort of prepare it to try to get rid of it. They sort of knew about that. They also ate bats there. Mm-hmm. And there are lots of bats. And the bats were fruit bats, and they ate the cicads. So the bats eat the cicads, and the people eat the bats. So these are two different ways to get exposure to whatever this toxin is in the cicad.
Right. And the people, you said, also eat the cicads.
Yes. They either could directly get it from the cicad, or they could get it from indirectly from the bats, because mm-hmm. they could be accumulating. And often plants, when they're stressed, produce more of these toxins that they're capable of producing. So I'm suspecting that the cicads were extremely enthusiastic about making this toxin during the World War, when there was all those chemicals that were causing stress to the plant. Mm-hmm. That's only a guess. I haven't proven that. But nonetheless, the plant is known to make this thing called BMAA, beta-methylaminoalanine, BMAA.
The fruit makes.
Yes, the fruit makes, and even possibly a fungus growing on the fruit makes. It's unclear from the papers I've read, mm-hmm. but it's in the fruit, BMAA. And this is an amino acid, a non-coding amino acid, just like glufosinate and just like glyphosate. And but it's natural, you know, it's produced by plants. And so these people are eating the BMAA, and then they're getting ALS down the road, which is really interesting. And it turns out that BMAA is an amino acid that substitutes for serine by mistake. Serine is another one of the 20. And so, again, you can say, okay, where is serine essential? Which proteins, you know, require serine? If you put the BMAA there, they won't work. What are they? And you find a perfect match, which is glutamate transport. There's a protein that's used by the astrocytes, which are the helper cells in the brain, and it's used to
yank. Neurons, right?
They're helping the neurons. Mm-hmm. And they're there to support them. And the neurons, glutamate, I mentioned, is a neurotoxin. It's in these vaccines. It's in MMR, and it's in the flu vaccine. It's produced, you know, it's used in the brain for communication. So it's a neurotransmitter, but if there's too much of it, it's neurotoxic because it kind of overfires and the neuron burns out. And so the system is very elegant that the neuron releases the glutamate into the synapse for the signal. And then the astrocyte is sitting right there, and it sucks the glutamate out of the synapse very quickly to keep it from being toxic. So it's there, it does its signaling, it gets out. It goes in and it gets out. And the astrocyte grabs the glutamate and then converts it into glutamine and sends it back to the neuron through the back door as glutamine, which is not toxic. So it's mm-hmm. really kind of a neat system that you've detoxed the toxic chemical, ship it back to the neuron, and then the neuron converts it back to glutamate and hides it inside these vesicles until it's ready to be released again. So it's a great system they have for keeping the glutamate from showing up where it shouldn't show up and making sure it doesn't ever get too high concentration in the synapse. Mm-hmm. That process will break down if the astrocyte has problems with that whole system. And there's two ways it could have problems. One is through not being able to get it up through the glutamate transport system, mm-hmm. and two is not being able to convert it to glutamine using an enzyme called glutamine synthetase. Mm-hmm. And it turns out glyphosate chelates manganese, which will interfere with glutamine synthetase, causing it not to be able to convert the glutamate to glutamine. And BMAA prevents it from getting brought up, taken out of the synapse. So mm-hmm. the BMAA will cause the glutamate to not be able to be pulled out of the synapse, which will burn up out the neuron, and that.
So you had excess glutamate.
Right, and in fact,
which is toxic.
Defects mm-hmm. in that enzyme are linked to ALS.
Mm. Interesting.
Yeah.
Very interesting. And so in Guam, there was an increase?
Yeah, tremendous increase, like 100-fold the norm. The worldwide incidence of ALS was in Guam after the war. And then it sort of gradually went down, slowly went down. And, of course, it takes a long time for these things to develop. It's one of those things, just like glyphosate, where it slowly accumulates over time and causes more and more damage. And then... And so it peaked, you know, shortly after the war, and then it gradually went down. And the bats also disappeared. So the bats, I don't know if the bats got also harmed by the BMAA, but they also got overhunted. But they, as the bats phased out, and then and with a delay, the ALS phased out.
So before the war, I'm imagining the people were eating the same
yes.
fruit and the... And the bats.
Right,
So you think there's something about the chemicals?
My guess is that the fruit increased mm-hmm. greatly its production of BMAA because of its reaction to the toxic chemicals that were in the soil.
That's
my guess. Mm-hmm. And I haven't proven that. That's just a hypothesis.
And is the BMAA seen in other parts of the world? And other fruits?
Yes, there are other things that have it, and I don't remember what those things are. I've only learned this part of it so far. There are a few other things, but I don't think it's terribly common, and I don't think we most... I think lilies, actually, if I'm remembering correctly, but I might be mixing that up with... I think that might be the other one that we're about to talk about. I'm a little confused on what else has the BMA. I won't say, because I'd have to check my... I'd have to fact-check that. But there are some other things that have it. And I should look into those.
But you feel that this pathway that we're talking about might be related to why ALS is increasing.
Right.
Not
right.
necessarily to the BMAA, but...
So other things that can be causing that. I mean, for example, glyphosate could then be also causing the ALS because of its ability to disrupt the astrocyte's ability to clear the BMA through this other method, which
there
is the manganese deficiency. Yeah.
Okay. Very good.
And then the other one, which is the sugar beets, which we'll save the best for last, because that's really interesting, I think. And and that one is something called AZE, and I've got it written down here, azetidine 2-carboxylic acid. It's kind of a mouthful, but they call it AZE for short, thank goodness, because that's a lot easier to remember.
AZE,
another non-coding amino acid that gets confused with proline. Proline is another one of the 20 basic amino acids. So you can see you have all these different toxins that are paralleled with a particular amino acid that's a coding amino acid, and their toxicity is derived from, I think, the fact that they replace that amino acid in the protein. So it's really kind of a great game to play to just go and dig out and see where proline, you know, where's proline essential, you know, and then you can predict what AZE is going to cause. And so, and if you do that, you can hit pay dirt because you can find a direct connection to multiple sclerosis, a very easy explanation of multiple sclerosis. And the reason is because of a protein called myelin basic protein, which is in myelin. And multiple sclerosis is basically a failure of the myelin sheath.
Which is around the nerves.
That's right. It coats the axons, and it's so important for them to be able to work properly. And multiple sclerosis has, they aren't working properly. They're not folded right. They're not, they're eroded. I mean, they're just not good. And myelin basic protein, it has proline as an essential amino acid, which if it's replaced with ACE, it's going to cause it not to work. So it's the same story all over again. Different disease, different protein, you know. Same story.
So tell me about the AZE and where that would come from.
Right. So that's what's really, really interesting is that it comes from sugar beets. And one of the things I found that was really, really fascinating was a patent. And sometimes you can find interesting information in patents. And this patent was for a technique to find out if there was AZE in a food product. And they got the idea of testing yeast and what was the other thing they tested? It was milk, I guess, milk and yeast.
So the company was trying to patent this test to find AZE because of its toxicity.
Right, and so they were saying, they were supposing that AZE was getting into the milk because the cows were being fed the pulp from the beets. So the sugar beets, once they, when they process the sugar beets and they get the sugar out of them, they leave behind this pulp, and they put that into the food that they feed to the cows.
Now, do you know the percentage of sugar beets that are GMO?
I think it's extremely large, 90 to 95%.
Wow.
In this country. Now, I don't know about elsewhere, but here it's a very high percentage.
Right.
GMO
and
Roundup Ready. Right.
And in terms of sugar production, the beets are, I believe, 30%. Is that
30% of the sugar worldwide, I believe, it comes from sugar beets, which I was surprised that it was that high, but that's pretty impressive.
But they're feeding the pulp to
And they're feeding the pulp
livestock.
To the livestock, so that means the livestock. And again, the milk. So you think all these things that you're feeding to the livestock is going to go into the milk, you know, especially anything that substitutes inside protein. So the casein, I already talked about the casein, the glyphosate. And maybe this one, too, BMAA, maybe this is a source of the toxicity of the milk that's causing kids to get allergic to milk. You know, it's another one of the same story again. So, and I suspect, and I would love to see the research that would show this, that if you looked at the GMO Roundup Ready beets compared to the non-GMO Roundup, the ones that are being exposed to glyphosate, that's a stressor. They may be producing a lot more of this than the ones that are not stressed. So I don't know. That's the question mark, but it's something to look into. And the BMA, and it's really interesting because the multiple sclerosis, these people figured this out from the epidemiology that the multiple sclerosis is showing up in high, the incidence of multiple sclerosis is especially high in places where either they eat a lot of beets or they grow a lot of sugar beets.
Very interesting. And so if the AZE displaces proline in the amino acid chain, then it disrupts the myelin. Is that right?
That's right, because the myelin critically depends on proline, just like these other molecules critically depend upon these other amino acids.
And that's how the MS could be happening.
And in fact, I think the article mentioned a number of other proteins that also contain conserved proline. So it's the same game I'm playing with glyphosate that they're playing, these authors are playing with this one, to say, let's go find those proteins where proline is essential, and see if, in fact, we can correlate the disease that you would expect, you know, with consuming this.
It's amazing.
It's such fun detective work, you know. It's just really neat stuff.
Yeah, you're putting it together. So where is where are these higher incidences of MS?
Well, for example, in Canada, and I think it was in Alberta, Canada. There's an area of Canada where they grow a lot of a lot of beets, and they have highest incidence of MS in the Americas. And then there's in Japan, I think it's Hokkaido, Japan, where they have like maybe 0.4% of the population, but they grow a substantial percentage, something like 40% of the sugar beets that supply the sugar. They have the highest incidence of MS, I think, in the Asian community. So the highest incidence of MS is in the place where they grow huge amounts of sugar beets in Japan. And then there's a history in Europe, too, where Napoleon brought in sugar beets because they were, I guess they had a sugar shortage from whatever other source they had been getting it from, and they... But maybe because of the wars that were going on, and he brought in sugar beets and really encouraged sugar beet production in France, and then they got MS following that. So
this was sometime
in
the
1800s. Yeah, and in fact, sugar beets were not, you know, it's only been in the last 100, 200 years that sugar beets have actually been used as a source of sugar. It's not something that humans have been doing from way back.
So it was from Napoleon when it was
introduced. Brought it in from the Americas, Really fascinating. And so then Europe and Germany started growing it too, and then they started getting multiple sclerosis. So you can follow it around, you know.
Wow. And when did that start to happen in France?
In 1800s, I think when was Napoleon? Early 1800s? I'm not sure of my timing, but I think so. Yeah.
I think I have it written down in my notes, but that's really, really
fascinating, isn't it? I was so thrilled to find that whole story about this ACE, because it was so clearly parallel to what I was seeing with glyphosate. And I really want to believe that this is what's happening with glyphosate, because it makes so much sense. And I'm hoping that the paper that Anthony and I have written will get published. We're struggling, of course. I mean, it's hard to get these papers published because there's a lot of pushback, but this information needs to get out. And then actually this morning, I was digging around and I found 2,4-D. And 2,4-D I knew was not an amino acid. There's no way that that's an amino acid. But what I found was that it apparently, that there are enzymes that attach 2,4-D to amino acids. And so there were something like 6 or 7 different amino acids that, phenylalanine, I remember, was one of them. But there were a bunch of different amino acids which the body would biological systems would hook it to 2,4-D. They would attach 2,4-D to the amino acid, which would then produce a non-coding amino acid that could cause trouble, because it's basically, and that's what glyphosate is actually. Glyphosate is glycine. Glyphosate is a complete glycine molecule with something stuck onto the nitrogen. So it's the same model with a 2,4-D, except that it's presented without the amino acid, but the body goes ahead and sticks it onto the amino acids, which then causes the same kind of problem.
So it could get into so many different places and cells in the body.
It's true. I mean, once you think about something that can go in and mess up protein synthesis, that's just all of biology practically, you know, because the proteins are the workhorses. They're the things that actually perform the chemical reactions that make biology happen. They're so crucial.
So,
we managed to fit everything. I'm impressed, because I thought we had too much material, but I think we did a good job of covering all of it.
You did a great job. This is very fascinating. Very fascinating.
It is very fascinating to me.
It comes down to getting rid of these toxic chemicals.
We have to.
And committed to growing and eating exclusively organic diet, right?
Oh, I just picture this beautiful future world in which humans have banned all of these chemicals from the face of the earth, and we're just all going back to organic, and we're putting more effort into growing food and doing it right, replenishing the soil. I mean, the soil is being ruined. There's just so much that's going on that's just going to, if we continue in this direction, the Earth is just going to be ruined. I mean, I feel it's just so awful what's happening, and we just have to wake up and do it differently. And all of us will feel so much healthier. People will be so much happier. It's a beautiful concept of a future time when we don't use these chemicals anymore. We just say no. No more herbicides, no more insecticides, no more fungicides, none of them. You know, just take them away, ban them all.
Absolutely. And thank you so much for all of your effort and commitment to you know, putting all these pieces together and educating the public.
Thank you.
And thank you, Dr. Donna Kaplan, for all your, you know, volunteering here at the station and passing along a lot of information. Absolutely.
And thank you, Cousin Rich. And I found that it was 1810 that I have in my notes when Napoleon introduced the
1810, okay, good.
Yeah.
So early 1800s was a good guess.
Very interesting.
Really, yes. And that was the first that Europe had any sugar beets.
Very interesting.
Okay, well, you were listening to Health Talk, the first and third Mondays of the month with Dr. Donna Kaplan and her wonderful guests that she always has. And up next, my good friend Richard with One World Radio. So thank you, doctors, for spending an hour with us.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you, Dr. Sonnet.
Okay, everyone,
thanks.
Go well.
Ahui ho.
When morning comes to Morgantown, the merchants roll their awnings down. The milk trucks make their morning rounds in morning Morgantown. We'll rise up early with the sun to ride the bus while everyone is yawning and the day is young. In morning Morgantown, morning Morgantown, buy your dreams a dollar down. Morning any town you name, morning's just the same. We'll find a table in the shade and sip and lemonade and watch the morning on parade in morning Morgantown. Ladies in their rainbow fashions, colored stop and go lights flashing, will wink at total strangers passing in morning Morgantown. Smile to win you with our all morning still to live in morning.